Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Welcome back to Travoltine Presents Easy Riders, hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore, covering Welcome Home, Roxy Carmichael. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome back.
Welcome back.
Not to Roxy Carmichael, but to you, the listener.
To our podcast.
Yes. Travolting presents the Easy Riders.
Travolting presents Easy Riders, yeah, covering Welcome Home,
Roxy Carmichael. We're welcoming you home to your favorite podcast, hopefully, if you're listening.
Yeah.
Or just at least one that you listen to. Yeah. Because today we're talking about the 1990.
We're in the 90s.
Yes. We've entered the 90s. Like I said, Winona, constantly referenced as an 80s icon, is only really in five movies in the 80s.
Yeah. But the two of those movies are like
her totemic vehicles.
Yeah, yeah.
But then, you know, we are entering the 90s officially with this movie, which is very 90s coded.
Yeah.
This is a very forgotten movie. You don't really hear much about this.
Right. Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's like, there's not like much to it. It's kind of, it's like last week's episode, it's kind of a footnote in her career.
Yeah.
The one notable thing about this is the first time that she gets a role written for her.
Yeah.
Like, every other role, including Heather's, like, she auditioned for those, or, mm-hmm. like, she was picked out because the director saw her in a different movie.
Yeah.
This is a movie that is whole cloth made for Winona Ryder.
Yeah.
It's, written by Karen Lee Hopkins, directed by Jim Abrahams. Who is notable? Because he's one of the Airplane guys.
Oh.
He directs, he co-directs with David and Jerry Zucker, Top Secret, Airplane, Ruthless People.
Scary Movie 4.
Co-creator.
He wrote Scary Movie 4.
He did write Scary Movie 4. Co-creator of The Naked Gun trilogy. He did Police Squad, which is The Naked Gun initial.
Not a lot. I only have 11 movies in his IMDb.
Yeah, but they're all like up until the end, they're all like kind of iconic horror comedies of the age. Because like you still like, including the ones he wrote, it's like Kentucky Fried Movie, Airplane, Top Secret, Ruthless People, Naked Gun, Big Business, Hot Shots, Hot Shots 2, Mafia, Scary Movie.
Yeah.
And then also some involvement in the Naked Gun sequels and Police Squad show. And it's just kind of funny that this is slotted in the middle there. Because almost all of those movies are kind of have a long cultural tale to this day. But this one does not. This is kind of his one flop, forgotten movie.
Yeah.
Amidst that kind of, you know, big run.
Is it a big flop? Like, I mean, not to jump into...
It's a big flop.
Because I didn't recognize this movie. I have not seen this movie. Just kind of...
This movie... no one really talks about it when it comes out. It's kind of thrown aside Winona-wise because she has Edward Scissorhands and Mermaids coming out in just like a month and a half from this.
Yeah, right.
So this is kind of the one that they just toss out to try and, you know, leech off of that success.
Sure, yeah.
As I've been doing for the show so far, I have been reading this Winona Ryder biography, and there's really not much about this movie in it. Aside from the fact that, like, she gets attached to this movie when she is like 16.
Wow.
It's like, they're like, we're going to write a movie for you. And she's like, great. I'd love that. And in the ensuing 2 years between her agreeing to be in this movie, she does Heathers. She does Great Balls of Fire. You know, her career really takes off.
Because this is coming from the Beetlejuice like hit.
Yeah, it's basically coming right after Beetlejuice. And she's like, this is great. I'm going to get a movie written for me. And, you know, it's like after 2 years, her career is very different.
Right. Yeah. Very different.
And she's not particularly interested in the story anymore or this movie. She's not like, because this is very much like her very 80s movie, I would say. Yeah, she had felt like she was like too old to play this role at this point, which I think is kind of accurate.
It's interesting, yeah.
Because she's 18 playing a like, she seems like, the character seemed 15 in this movie, essentially.
Yeah.
But she couldn't turn it down because they made the movie for her. So she kind of, I don't want to say she does this begrudgingly.
Yeah.
Because I think she puts a lot of soul into this character. But this isn't really a movie she's compelled by and doesn't really talk about that much.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, yeah, they wrote it for me. I did it. It was fine. Didn't no real impact. Then Mermaids and Edward Scissorhands come down. My career is exploding.
Yeah.
In a good way, exploding. In her personal life, the big change that's happening is this is the first movie she's filming in her relationship with Johnny Depp. Two of them start dating in between Great Balls of Fire in this movie.
Yeah.
He's on 21 Jump Street at the time, and she's working on this movie. So they're separated during most of the process.
Are they working on the same like film lot?
No. They're working in different parts of the country. Because this movie is set in Clyde, Ohio. And it's actually filmed in Clyde, Ohio. As well as Sandusky, Ohio.
Yeah.
Which is where, what's that theme park called that's there?
Cedar Point.
Cedar Point.
Yeah.
Big roller coaster park.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's dating Johnny Depp. It's her first like real relationship. She was dating Christian Slater for 2 years. Or 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
But but doesn't quite
greetings count. And salutations.
Greetings and salutations.
You do it so much better.
It's because I'm a nasty little freak.
Oh my god.
But no, yeah. They filmed this movie in Clyde, Ohio. They're separated, but they become like the tabloid sensation.
Yeah.
During this movie.
Yeah.
And it doesn't affect this movie because it ends up affecting Edward Scissorhands, obviously, because they're both in that movie.
Yeah.
Her, you know, even though she's not compelled, she still wants to do her due diligence for the role. Mm-hmm. She does her little, like, collecting items bit for Dinky. Her character's name in this movie is Dinky for some fucking reason.
Because she's stinky.
Yeah, they call her Stinky, like, obviously.
Yeah.
There's a joke I was going to say, but it's way too mean to the real person. I can't say it.
Okay.
It's about someone who I've met. That's a very funny name.
Oh.
That's
a rude way to talk about Cole.
Oh, boy. Check me out on the Above the Title podcast for my 4-hour episode on Saving Mr. Banks.
It's not a real podcast. I've never heard of it. Not even sure it exists.
But her big appeal to this character is she did find Dinky a very practical character, which kind of sounds like a thing an actor says when they don't really fully know what else to say about the character. But I guess Dinky's practical. She has a bunch of animals she lives with.
Well, it just seems very much like we wrote a movie for you.
Yeah.
Winona from Beetlejuice.
Yes.
She's like, oh, what's the role? It's like, well, remember in Beetlejuice, you're playing an outsider, outcast who kind of had a weird gothic like personification. Yeah. Well, in this one, you're an outcast, you're an outsider, and you're kind of like a tomboy, essentially.
Yeah.
It's very much in like tomboyish like appearances.
Yeah. That's probably all I have in terms of context for the movie. Do you want to just delve into it?
Jeff Daniels is in this movie.
He looks great.
Yeah.
More like Jeff Daddy.
Yeah, I say we just get right into it because there's context, but there's context that'll be filled in with the plot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The context is, this is kind of a nothing movie. Not as bad
as last week's,
but
yeah, Great Balls of Fire.
There's not too much to say here.
Right.
Because the main issue with this movie is that
it's so predictable.
It basically tells you how the entire plot's going to go in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then you're just waiting for this very obvious thing to happen.
Yeah.
That all the characters have all the clues to also figure out.
Yeah.
And then it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right, come on. Let's get to the chase.
Let's cut to it. Yeah.
And then you just sit there frustrated for about 80 minutes of this 90-minute movie.
Right. And then it ends.
And it's not that this movie is necessarily bad. I think it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like a respectable 5 or 6 out of 10, if I were to
put it like 5 or 6.
Yeah, 5 or 6. Like, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like competently made, well acted. Yeah. There's just not much to it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a
strong 6. I give it a strong 6 like eating, for the performances.
It's like
alone.
A cheeseburger movie.
Yeah, yeah. Chicken strips.
Or I shouldn't even say it's like a McDonald's cheeseburger movie.
Not a Gordon Ramsay
it's like,
burger movie.
It's kind of like empty calories. You enjoyed it in the process, but you're not getting anything out of it.
Yeah, right.
First sequence in this movie is
a little bit of flashback.
We get a flashback 15 years ago.
Yeah.
We get Roxy Carmichael.
Young Roxy.
Roxy Carmichael.
Fun fact. You know who's playing young Roxy in this scene? Carla Gugino.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
That's fun.
This is early Carla Gugino.
That is actually very fun.
Yeah.
And then I don't know who's playing young Jeff Daniels in this scene.
It's a guy named Rob King.
Rob King.
No. Doesn't yeah. I don't think I haven't looked at his IMDb, so maybe he's an Oscar winner, but no, he's
gotcha.
Not. I'm just looking at it. Looks like he mostly went into stunts.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
he might have just been a stunt guy. They're standing. They're like, yeah, get in there.
Yeah. So,
but Roxy has a baby, and she's leaving town.
Yeah, we see her room, which is decorated all in pink colors. We're building a lot of this background lore into Roxy. She has a lot of this pink stuff in her room, but she goes the young. Bob Denton.
Yeah. There's the Jeff Daniels character, we'll later find out. And her have a baby, and she is determined to leave town. She wants to go find her way in the world.
Sorry, Denton Webb. That's a character name.
She's leaving him with the baby. Yeah. And she's like, just give it to someone who will take care of it.
Yeah.
And that's essentially the extent of the scene. She leaves.
Yeah.
We cut 15 years into the future, and that's where we meet
Winona Ryder.
Dinky Bassetti. A normal name that real people have.
Yes. Dinky Bassetti.
She's kind of just like a, I don't want to say messy, but like messy goth kid.
I mean, I feel like tomboy is kind of like the right characteristic.
Her hobbies are building Noah's Ark along the bank of Lake Michigan or Lake Erie. And herding animals into it.
Yeah, some injured animals. That she finds along the way that she calls her friends.
Some pigs, a goat. I don't know where all these things
come
from.
A couple dogs, yeah. But she's riding her bike. She's clearly an outsider because she gets bullied.
We got this, if you don't like what you see, take a look away from me song.
Yeah.
Very much like 80s movie where the song just describes the plot that you're watching.
Very much so.
And, you know, at this point, you're basically immediately like, okay, she's the baby from the opening scene. But then you start being like, as you know, the next few minutes progress, it kind of becomes obvious that's like,
oh no,
well, they wouldn't tell us that she's the baby.
Right. You know right away that, oh, the twist is going to be she's not the baby. And if you think I'm spoiling the movie, no. This is like 5 minutes in the movie when you, the audience, have made up your minds about it.
Because it's too obvious that she's the baby.
So obvious, yeah.
And that things are going to, you know. All solve like sort themselves out.
Yeah,
that
when her mom comes home
as an audience member who watches movies, it's so obvious. Like, okay, she's not the baby,
right?
That's going to be the hard lesson of life she has to learn at the end of this movie,
right?
And she hasn't even externalized this
that she thinks her mom is Roxy.
Just like it's the movie is such basic language. You're just like, yeah, this is clearly how this movie's going to go.
But she's driving her bike through town, and we see the town decorated up.
Yeah, for Welcome Home Roxy Carmichael Day.
This person who is famous. What I do like about the movie is they never quite establish what she's famous for.
Yeah, at one point she asks, what is she famous for, and they don't even give you an answer.
Because he says, like, well, she was what's she famous for? She was mentioned in one of these guys' songs. And she's like, okay, well, what else? Like, she's not famous from that alone.
She's just kind of this, like, amorphous local celebrity type.
Yeah.
You never see her face.
It's kind of like me in Huntington.
Yeah, it's like you in Huntington, Indiana. Amorphous local celebrity.
They don't have Welcome Home Stuart Elmore Day.
But she,
not yet.
She's apparently given the town a lot of money to build a beauty and cosmetology school.
Yeah.
They have like a little museum for her in her old house. We get a scene with Stephen Tobolowsky, who we talked about last week in Great Balls of Fire, who's the mayor of the town.
Yeah.
He's like, it's Welcome Home, Roxy Carmichael Day. Yeah.
Have you been to the Walt Disney original house in Illinois?
I have.
Or in Chicago, I should say.
I have not. So here's, I have been to, it's funny that we brought this up because I did that other podcast talking so much about Disney history.
Oh.
I have been to the Walt Disney family home in Missouri.
Oh.
In Marceline, which is the basis for Main Street USA in the theme parks.
Yeah.
And then I've been to Disney Studios in L.A., but I weirdly live 10 minutes away from his birth home in Chicago, and I've never been there.
Former guest on the show, Angelica Rosa, who's also my girlfriend, where she used to live, she was like 2 blocks away.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, from the Walt Disney childhood home.
I need to just go there one day just to like say I did
it. It's a house.
It's a house.
That's all it is, just a house.
Like just drive by it just to do it.
Yeah.
They're opening a Disney 100 exhibit in Chicago.
Yeah, I saw this that.
Week. Maybe I'll go to that and then go to the house afterward.
Maybe.
Sounds fun. Sounds like a fun day.
But it's kind of similar in that vein with Roxy Carmichael. Yes. That they have her childhood house on display.
Yes.
And so, but we start with the auditorium in school. I think it's school.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of students there. And Roxy walks in like kind of befuddled, like she's late. Clearly we get right away that she's Dinky. Sorry. Dinky, not Roxy.
Put some respect on that
right.
name.
Roxy Jr. apparently.
Yeah.
But Dinky, who walks in, and immediately we get the vibe she's being bullied, and she looks over one of the boys who is with the jocks, I should say. This boy will come in later. This is Thomas Wilson Brown playing Gerald Howells.
Yes. Who is not important to the movie, in spite of the movie constantly insisting he is.
Right.
It's like a relationship that just has no, that makes no impact.
No, I wish it did, but it didn't.
Because this whole opening is basically just establishing how isolated she feels in her community. Her only friends are animals.
Yeah.
Her parents, she's adopted, and her adopted parents don't like her very much.
Yeah. Graham Beckel playing Les Bassetti and Frances Fisher playing Rochelle Bassetti. Yes. Frances Fisher is a face you probably recognize in other movies.
She notably is the mom in Titanic.
Yes.
Or Rose's mom in Titanic.
Yeah.
She plays a lot of disapproving moms.
She does.
She does kind of. Not to be disrespectful, but she does kind of have that face.
Yeah.
That like kind of just looks disapproving.
Yeah.
But they're both trying to ship her off to essentially a boarding school.
Yeah.
Because
she is an outsider. She doesn't socialize with
them.
She
gets into a lot of trouble.
Yeah. And so, but they're all celebrating Welcome Home Roxy Carmichael Day as soon. She's going to come into town. It's going to be a great celebration, blah, 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 blah.
But she has determined, because she's adopted, that she's Roxy Carmichael is
her
mother.
Mother.
And that when Roxy comes to town, she's going to take Dinky away.
Yes.
Important to know is that Dinky is very good at school. She gets consistent A's.
Yeah.
She just doesn't have any good relations with her students or teachers.
Yeah. There's one thing to note that is a thread that passes infrequently throughout this movie is we get cuts to what the movie's telling us is Roxy Carmichael.
Yeah.
With the first one being very, I get what the movie's trying to do, but I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a nudity shot.
Yeah.
It's a woman who's completely nude.
Jumping into a pool.
We only see her backside. But she jumps into a pool, gets out, walks into her home. And she lives in a bigger house with a pool in her backyard. Like it's getting us to kind of get familiar with this like figure known as Roxy Carmichael.
Yeah.
Who, can I just say who it is, like movie wise, who plays
that's
it?
Fine.
Played by Ava Fabian, who's a Playboy girl.
Oh, yeah.
Like that's it. If that goes to show, like you could almost look that up in advance. Granted, I know IMDb wasn't a thing in the 80s or 90s, but like, had you known going into the movie, like, oh, like this apparently important figure is played by a Playboy girl.
They want her to just be this like platonic ideal of like what you like of escaping your hometown.
Yeah.
Is kind of the idea.
Right.
That like you two can look beautiful and swim in a pool and live
have
in a
jewelry,
mansion.
Have people fawn over you.
Yes.
All that kind of stuff.
And it is a smart choice in the movie to never show her face, I think.
Right, I agree.
Like it's a good detail. There's actual directorial intent in that.
Yeah.
The movie just never delves much further into that.
It doesn't finish that thought. Doesn't finish that thread. Because a thread that I also really liked in this movie, I'm bouncing around a little bit, is that just like with Dinky's role of having something that she feels like she had something with Roxy that she wants to get back.
Yes.
And that's a lot of other people in the town.
Yeah. Everybody in the town has had a relationship with Roxy.
Yeah.
It's an unfinished thought, much like...
Very much so.
Like, yeah. If you made a movie with this specific idea that is just about, you know, someone was able to escape their hometown and is now coming back, and everyone's kind of grappling with the emotions of this person got away back. And was a major success. What was life like with them?
Yeah.
I think that there's a movie there.
It's a great two-thirds of a thought.
Yes.
It's fantastic two-thirds of an idea.
But you have to...
finish it.
I do think this movie takes a like kind of the right end approach to it in that it mm-hmm. leaves it unsatisfying.
Yeah.
But I don't know what it is, but there's something unsatisfying about the unsatisfaction. Like, it doesn't feel earned.
Yeah. Right. Because it doesn't hit home for as much for other people as it does with Dinky, because mm-hmm. we don't see that dissatisfaction with Denton. We don't see the dissatisfaction with who are the two is it?
Like, there are some movies where the idea of the movie is that the ending is not satisfying.
Like Evelyn and Libby.
Yeah.
It's very two like very low key characters that just kinda hint more towards the sense they're two lesbian lovers.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least maybe they're not lovers. Maybe they're just kind of friends with benefits, maybe.
That's the implication.
But there's a scene where it's like it presumed that they had sex prior to the night. And
yeah.
I think it's Libby who asks Evelyn, it's like, well, how was it? And she says, she's kind of quiet. She's like, not Roxy, isn't it? It's like, yeah. No, not Roxy. So it just builds that world of
this
like
mythos.
This mythos Roxy. That there's a lot of people waiting for Roxy to come. But what the movie doesn't do to finish that unsatisfaction is, where's Evelyn's reaction? Where's yeah. Denton's reaction? Where's
we don't get to
everybody's
see
reaction?
How
what that impacts.
Answer everyone gets when
just
Roxy
Dinky.
Does not come back.
Right, just Dinky. Which, and Dinky's resolve is not finished either.
Yeah.
You get a reaction, but then that reaction doesn't fall into a, but then this happens.
Yeah, we like, get an epilogue scene and that's it.
That's it.
Because the one friend that Dinky does develop in the movie, or two, I guess, is Jeff Daniels.
Yeah.
Who was Roxy's boyfriend.
The guy who in the earlier yeah. Flashback.
And she has a weird relationship with him where she just, I don't know if they've met before, because she just keeps coming up to him and asking him questions about Roxy Carmichael.
Yeah.
And then she determines that he must be her father.
Right.
And then he's like, no, I'm not. That baby died.
Yeah.
And then the other friend she develops is the guidance counselor at the school.
That is the most frustrating one.
Yeah.
Because that's the one that builds up to like what we think is going to be the twist, right?
Yes.
Which, well, I'll just say it now. I think that I thought this movie was building us up to being like, oh, no, it's the guidance counselor that's her mother.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be the resolution.
I actually didn't get that.
You didn't?
The vibe I was getting with, especially with this character, is that that Roxy's not going to be her mom, but I was getting that she finds like a surrogate mom
in the guidance counselor,
and that Jeff Daniels becomes her surrogate dad.
See, it does
kind of happen.
It kind of, but it doesn't really hit the home plate. It only gets to third base, but it doesn't go to all the home run for it for me mm-hmm. because for me, I'm watching and I'm thinking like, okay, why is this guidance counselor so persistent with Dinky? Like, she is constantly that missing motherly figure for her that almost seems like she's sad about something as Dinky's talking about all her
yeah.
things. And I'm like, is this somebody who is like a mom who missed out on their child growing up and now wants to reconnect and doesn't know how to like bring it up to them? Like, by the way, I'm your mom. Like, and then there was a shiver of a thought that quickly vanished with a lot of the Roxy scenes where I was like, is she Roxy? But if she's under like a coat, but then people would see her and recognize her.
Yeah.
So I don't get what this movie's trying to do with the superintendent. Like,
because in like typical 80s fashion, the story would be like the guidance counselor, she develops a relationship with her. She's the one person who understands her. And then the guidance counselor adopts her at the end.
Yeah.
Like, that's how you would
Matilda.
Expect. That's how you'd expect this movie
yeah.
to go.
Yeah.
It doesn't exactly happen, but she does kind of find some surrogate mother effect in that character.
Yeah.
Then the third relationship she has for most of the movie is this kid, Gerald, who you mentioned.
Yeah.
Who's like
love interest.
Yeah, who's like her on again, off again love interest, who kind of has a crush on her but doesn't want to get bullied by their kids because of it, but then ends up fixing her arc.
Well, he ends up like giving into like not caring about what the other folks feel, because the way the movie shows that is he gets braces.
Yeah, he gets braces because Jeff Daniels tells him, if you care about her, go do something nice for her. Buy her some chocolates, buy her some flowers, just something nice.
He gets braces.
And early in the movie, she'd been like, you should get braces. And he does.
Yeah.
that's what he does. Which is kind of cute. That is like a nice, like,
yeah,
that's how kids think.
You're right. And it's his way of being like, I don't care what kids think about me, that I like you. Which is an arc of some kind.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're bouncing around through the movie, but I really do feel like, because this movie doesn't really have a plot.
Yeah, it's she has the three central relationships.
That develop
slowly.
Right.
There's a lot of scenes of just people, you know, I saw scenes of people talking as every movie, but it's like really just scenes of people talking about nothing. Building to this climax where Roxy is supposed to come back.
Right, but like with the two women, or like the one, Evelyn, I want to say, it's Evelyn who had the relationship with Roxy, and then it's Denton, Jeff Daniels. See, that's the thing. It's like what I just mentioned with Evelyn, who is having this relationship with another woman, but she can't quite fill that hole that Roxy left with her.
Yeah.
Same thing with Denton, who was the guy who had a child with Roxy. Roxy then left, and he has all these memories of her. And the town even knows that he was her lover.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, are you feeling weird that Roxy's coming back? And he's like, I don't know what you're talking
about. And his marriage collapses.
His marriage, and he has kids.
Because he keeps going to Roxy Carmichael's house and just sitting outside and looking at it.
And there's even a scene where he has a bunch of unsent written letters to Roxy. Like, he clearly has, like, this missing part of himself.
Like, these are all interesting.
But the movie doesn't.
Things to, like, explore.
But there's no resolution.
There's a really interest. I like movies that are about like a place.
Yeah.
Like just you expand out and like just kind of get the psychosis and the psychology of a town.
Right.
And like, and almost every time that a movie tries to do it, I end up disappointed. Great example is the sixth Nightmare on Elm Street movie. It's called Freddy's Dead. It's maybe one of the most interesting takes I've seen for a horror movie that does nothing with it. The pitch is like, what would a town look like after dealing with Freddy Krueger for 20 years? And it's like, just like, abandoned. Everyone's traumatized. There's no kids in the town. All these parents have had their kids murdered by Freddy Krueger.
Wow.
And I'm like, that's a cool pitch for a movie. Like, what does...
But then let me guess, Freddy comes back.
Yeah, Freddy comes back and he just like terrorizes some kids who stumble into the town.
Yeah.
Does that? But like, a movie like that or a movie like this, if it is just like, really delved into the psychology of like, what did this person leaving and finding success and kind of the wreckage they left in their wake?
Yeah.
Because we never really get any knowledge about what Roxy was like in this town. She's so amorphous and shapeless.
Because the movie thinks it's being clever by being like, you'll never really get to see the full Roxy. Yeah. And it's like, but we kind of need a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's smart for the movie to never show her, but at the same time, these people have to talk about Roxy in a real way. Yeah, they can't be like, yeah, you know, we had a thing. And then, like, seemingly that's traumatized them for the past 15 years.
Right, exactly. Like, tell me more.
You have to pick a lane.
Can we just get to the end?
I mean, I think we are.
I think we are at the end, but, like...
Because she develops this relationship with these three characters, and then at the end, she dresses up really nice.
Yeah.
And decides to go to the Roxy Carmichael event to meet her mother.
Yeah.
Which is not her mother.
And then a limousine pulls up. Everyone's celebrating. They're like, here comes Roxy. And then the driver comes out, hands a package and a letter to the mayor. And then they're like, unfortunately, due to prior circumstances, I'm unable to attend this event. And everyone's like, oh no.
But here's a dedication plaque.
Right. And then Roxy then goes for the limousine and she gets stopped by Jeff Daniels, who finds out earlier that that Roxy thinks he's her dad and Roxy's her mom. And he's like, oh, she's got that all wrong. Cut to her trying to get to the limousine. Jeff Daniels stops her. Gerald shows up.
Yeah,
and he's like,
with braces.
And he's like, stop, stop. It's like, she's not your mom. I'm not your dad. It's like, of course you guys are. Of course you guys are. It's like, no, no, no. You don't understand. The baby died.
Yeah, there's no way.
It's like I went to visit the baby when it got picked up at the hospital and it had died.
And I do want to say that this movie is, Winona is really giving a performance in this movie. She's not phoning it in.
So is Jeff Daniels.
Yes.
So is the, I should know her name, but the guidance counselor.
But I want to emphasize Winona, not only because she's a subject of the show, but she's really selling the heartbreak in this scene.
Layla Robbins plays Elizabeth Zacks,
yes,
who's the guidance counselor.
Yeah, they're all charming performances.
But hell, even the two women are doing a pretty good job, I think.
There's no bad performance in this movie.
Yeah.
Everyone's fine. But Winona at the end here really does sell this heartbreak.
Yeah.
And she really gets at what the movie is missing, which is that you need to understand how crushing this is for the entire town.
Yeah.
That Roxy didn't show up and wasn't able to alleviate this trauma. They just have to continue to live with it.
Yeah. You mentioned you like movies that are about a place. I like movies that are about people trying to find their origins.
Yeah.
And come to disappointing conclusions.
Yeah.
But have to find alternative.
That's always kind of
from that.
That unsatisfying satisfaction is always good in a movie.
Yeah. Yeah. The classic, like, you're adopted. You're trying to find who your parents are. Mm. You never quite figure out the answer, but you learn that the family that you had all along was a family you needed. Well, something like that.
In 2017, there were two big blockbusters that I think really exemplified that point. And it was Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah.
And Star Wars The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
Both of those movies are about a person who thinks that they're much more important than they are, searching for their like parents and their origin.
Yeah.
Ryan Gosling in the movie finds out he's not the son of Rick Deckard.
Right.
He's just a robot who happened to discover a conscience by accident. He's not important.
Yeah.
And that movie is so special in how it ends with him acknowledging that he's not important.
Yeah.
And he's just a footnote in this, and that's how he becomes important.
Ray, who thinks her parents were somebody of massive importance, and then comes to the conclusion that they were nobody.
Yeah, they were just drunks.
Yeah.
They sold her off for drinking money, but that she is able to determine her own reality. She's not defined by her parents.
And then we will not talk not talk about the next movie.
And this movie kind of toes up to that line where it's like she doesn't have to be defined by Roxy. Dinky is her own. I can't believe we have to keep saying Dinky.
Dinky, it really is bothersome.
Yeah, it is bothersome. Dinky is her own person.
Yeah.
And she can choose who she wants to be, which is just by having a boyfriend at the end.
Yeah.
That's like her big choice as she starts dating Gerald. And then Jeff Daniels burns all his letters and his wife comes back after he like threw things at her.
Yeah.
But
then what does the guidance counselor do?
I guess continues being a guidance counselor.
But there's
resolution.
There's no follow-up scene to that of like, I know you were thinking Roxy was your mother and I'm sorry, but just know that I'll always be here for you.
Because
that does not exist.
You
in this
need
movie.
Something at the end of this movie that shows like the town is moving on. These people are moving on. You get that with Jeff Daniels burning the letters, but we don't know why his wife came back. Did he just call her and apologize?
I don't know. There's no scene.
Dinky's the only one who gets semi-satisfying,
barely.
Yeah, and it's just like, well, now she just has a boyfriend, which is nice. I'm glad that like she finds friends.
Her adopted parents, like, she has a good scene with her adopted father.
Yeah,
because he like knocks on the door and she hands him like a bow that she made or something. Like it's sort of like they're fixing that.
Yeah,
they're getting closer, like breaking down the walls.
Yeah, she learns to accept her real parent or her adoptive parents because she now knows she doesn't have a real parent. Because
like she usually locks herself in a room and it's all black, and it's a scene where it's like after they had kind of revealed like, hey, we're gonna send you to boarding school, and she's like, no, I'm gonna go with my mom, Roxy, and they're like, what are you talking about? And then the scene right before she goes to Roxy Carmichael Day, there's new carpet put in her room. I left the scene because it's black carpet. The adopted father put it in on himself. Mm-hmm. He's like, he knocks on the door. He's like, do you like the carpet? I put it in.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's like, so, you know, you really gave us a scare there because she went missing with the
guidance counselor.
And then she just opens the door, creaks it open, hands him the bow, closes it, and he kind of walks away. But it's a very, I don't know. I like that scene because even prior to that, when she's missing, I say when she's missing, she went on a mall shopping spree with the superintendent and didn't tell anybody. So the foster parents
think that she's been abducted.
She's been abducted or something. She ran away. And so like there's like one little scene where, the mother, the adopted mother, whatever her name is. I'm sorry. I forget. She's like, well, maybe Roxy will come back. Like, I don't think it's that big of a deal. And the dad is like, she's our daughter.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to go find her.
Yeah. I like the note of hope that the movie ends on, that, like, Roxy's, or Dinky is going to figure this all out. That's nice.
Yeah.
It's charming. I like to leave young characters, you know, with optimism.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's, if you're going to put all these elements into a movie, you have to follow through on them.
Yeah, and it's a very frustrating movie.
Yes.
Frustrating because it had the two-thirds of a good idea.
It's frustrating because it's not bad.
Right.
And you can't just discount that. You're like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
I just wish that there was more to it.
Yeah.
It doesn't fully come together.
Yeah. That's really all to say about this
movie. One thing, I do have one question about this movie.
Yeah.
The movie never actually elaborates how she figured out or determined that she was Roxy Carmichael's daughter in the first place.
I have an internal theory, but...
Because at the beginning of the movie, she already suspects it.
Yeah.
But then later, Jeff Daniels is like, yeah, Roxy had a baby 15 years ago.
And then it has that whole reveal thing
but
to her.
But how was she suspecting it at the start?
At the start? What?
Nothing.
So for me, it's like, I think it's a kind of a common thing with a lot of adoptive children is they, especially in small towns, where you hear about someone of great stature. Well, I'm going to bring up a very weird example.
Yes.
How I Met Your Mother. Neil Patrick Harris's character, who, and there's an arc in one of the seasons where he thinks Bob Barker is his dad.
Yeah.
And it's just because he watches Bob Barker on TV all the time. And his mom, who in the comedic sense of the show is a drunk. He's a drunk who's very neglectful. So he's like, Bob Barker, like, he looks cool. It's like, oh, he's your father or whatever. And so he grows up his whole life thinking Bob Barker's his father. And when he goes to The Price is Right, talks to Bob Barker, and he has this whole thing where he thinks is his real dad, and then it gets revealed that he isn't his real dad, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, the point of which is I do think it's kind of like there's a lot of movies that use this kind of trope, I would say, where kids who grew up without their parents or parent, i.e. adopted or whatever, kind of attach that symbol onto somebody of great stature, you know? Because you never want to believe that your parents gave you up because they didn't want you. The part of it is you want to think that your parents gave you up because they went on to live like they had bigger things to do. And that somehow feels easier than your parents just didn't want you.
Yeah.
If your dad went off to like gave you up for adoption because he had to go save the world, then you can stomach that easier than they just didn't want you. Sorry, I went on a really serious tangent with that one. But that's kind of my internal... I probably because I carry a lot of that from like past movies and stuff that I've seen that has that same trope. There's lots of tropes that have that where it's like, you know, you have the character who doesn't know who their parents are and they attribute them to like these massive things like Rey in episode 8.
Yeah.
She doesn't outright say, I think Han is my dad
or Luke is my dad.
But episode 8 kind of has
She's looking for that.
She's looking for any hint or motif that could lead her to think.
Yeah, because there have been instances of people. Just kind of assigning celebrities as their parents.
Yeah, right.
You know, they have to get restraining orders. It's not good.
Well, yeah, that too. But in episode 7, when she's able to like find the carbonator of the Millennium Falcon in front of Han,
the compressor.
That's bypassed
the compressor.
Yeah. Little bits like that.
Weird movie.
Frustrating because. You're right. We can't just discount it.
Yeah.
It's got some good bits. There's no bad performance. Jeff Daniels does really good.
Jeff Daniels is a good actor.
He's a good actor.
Good actor. Locked in. Movie comes out. No one sees it.
Yeah.
Makes like $4 million on a $12 million budget.
Oofta.
Big flop. But it's a big flop that doesn't really affect
anyone. Doesn't have an impact, yeah.
Yeah, because Winona has Edward Scissorhands and Mermaids immediately after this.
Yeah. She's
no one's even thinking about this movie. It's just like the kind of the fun side note to her 1990. People are like, yeah, she was in all these big movies, and then also this one.
She's gonna be fine.
Yeah, she'll be fine. She gets some good notices for this movie, but not many, because there's not many people see it.
Right.
That's about the extent of the impact of the movie, because it doesn't have one. Well,
I have nothing else to say. I'm good.
I don't have anything else to say about this movie either. Thank you for listening to it. It is, you know, if it's on cable, it's worth watching.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't recommend seeking it out.
Yeah.
I'm happy Winona, you know, got the opportunity to have a role written for her at this stage, even if she is not as happy about it as I am, I guess. Yeah. But yeah, she does the movie. And next week we'll be talking about her big success in 1990, the movie that continues to solidify her in this like major status.
Yeah.
And that movie is Edward Scissorhands. Snip, 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 snip.
Yep.
That's gonna be a fun one. We're hopefully gonna be joined by a cool guest for that. Thank you so much for listening to this episode on Welcome Home, Roxy Carmichael. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on. As a reminder, we are available on Spotify, Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and YouTube. Pop into our Reddit, r/Travolting. TravoltingPodcast@gmail.com. You find me on Twitter at Jeff W. Sweeney.
I'm on Instagram. You know where.
Yeah. And special thanks, as always, to Rebecca Sweeney for our graphic design and Michael Van Bodegem-Smith for the theme music that's now sending you out. Have a great week, folks.